seagull. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Yes, we are Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, Dr. Fran Storch, wherever she is. She'll be here soon. Anyway, she'll be in my background here today. We're trying a different angle here. This is Bicycle Talk, episode 377, to be broadcast on January 10th, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you're listening right here on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment right down here below, or if not, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Rant of the week. Here we go. Enough snow to shovel, but hardly enough to play in. Yeah, we had a little snowstorm. We're having all sorts of interesting events here up in the far northeastern corner of Connecticut. And last week we had a power outage, and I talked about that. This week we had snow and no power outage, but definitely got some snow. So anyway, kind of takes away the ability to ride your bike outside, unless you have a fat bike and you like to ride your bike outside in the snow, or a mountain bike, you like to ride your bike in the snow, or if you are a hardy, and I say really hardy, commuter and have a way of riding your bike in the snow. I'm not that hardy. So I tend to switch sports when we have snow, and I would rather be out cross-country skiing or snowshoeing or doing something like that. But again, enough snow to shovel, but not enough to play in. And I'm sure there's some people that got out and played in it, but it wasn't me. Anyway, I did begin my very first extreme spin class, though, yesterday, which is an hour and a half long spinning session, basically indoor cycling session. It's not really spinning, it's more indoor cycling. And I did start that yesterday, and it's an 11-week program that we run up at the Mansfield Community Center. So, yeah, cheers for that. Anyway, another quick question. And have you ever been doored? But of course, this and more in the show. Positive side, the rebirth of cycling for e-bike roadies. Yeah. Yeah, what do you think of that? E-bike roadies. You know who you are. I know some of you are listening right now. And I just find that e-bikes are just kind of a very, very cool thing. There's now really sophisticated road bikes you can get that are e-bikes, which have pretty good range on them, too. And anyway, we'll talk a little more about that in the show. Did you know that in 2021, more Americans bought e-bikes than electric cars, according to one study? The 880,000 e-bikes sold that year nearly doubled the sales of the year before. It's happening, folks. It's really happening. So here we go. Good morning, Chris. How are you? Good morning, Don. How are you? We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the H.R.1019-E-Bike Act in the 117th Congress, 2021 through 2022. It was introduced in-house for electric incentive kickstart for the Environmental Act, or the E-Bike Act, as they call it. The bill allows a refundable tax credit for 30% of the cost of a qualified electric bicycle. The credit limit to $1,500 per taxpayer, less all credits allowed for two preceding tax tables, taxable years. A qualified e-bike is one that is a two-wheeled vehicle that is, among other things, equipped with an electric motor of less than 750 watts and capable of propelling such a vehicle. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this when we get into the show, and we're going to hear it for e-bike tax credits and your guide to U.S. electric bike rebates and tax credits. And that came from 2023, but we will talk about that today. But of course, this and more in the show. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Is this your year for the bicycle mirror? You know, I swore I would never put a mirror on my bike, you know, because I was just such a, you know, I was such a Lycra geek. And first it was a dyed-in-the-wool geek because, you know, we wore wool shorts and wool jerseys. Am I dating myself? Probably true. Anyway.
You're dating me.
I am dating you also. It's all true. It's been almost 19 years, you know.
No!
Anyway, coming up.
Wackadoo.
Coming up real soon. Anyway, we'll talk about that in February, Franny.
Are you going to leave me?
All right. She asked me this all the time. No. So, anyway, so is this your year for the bicycle mirror? I swore I never put one on. I love my bicycle mirror. I also love my bicycle radar. Another true, wonderful invention that is out there. I've talked about it a lot on the show. I can only tell you that it is a game changer. So maybe you are also looking at under cycling tips, maybe even changing your routes to less traveled roads. There's an idea. How about that? Stay off the stupid roads that have the stupid vehicles with the stupid wide lanes that people with stupid vehicles ride their cars into instead of paying attention to where they're going. Anyway, since we will not be able to control the behemoth infestation and deluge, let's find a safer way to ride our bikes this year. Ride safe and smart. Move on to first item in contents. That's what it says on my little notes here. So my first item in the contents is last week I had run out of time and I was about to talk about something really, really silly, Traffic Calming 101. Believe it or not, this is from 2008. Can you believe this? It just amazes me. So anyway, Traffic Calming 101, December 31st, 2008. In almost all U.S. cities, the bulk of right-of-way is given to the roadway for vehicles, the least to the sidewalk for pedestrians. Just suppose Americans were to extend their walking radius by only a few hundred feet, the result could be an emancipation. Yeah, that was William H. White, Rediscovering the Center. Anyway, in Europe, traffic calming is a direct translation from the German word, which I will never be able to discuss, and it's a system of design, I can't pronounce that, and management strategies that aim to balance traffic on streets with other uses is founded in the area on the idea that streets should help create and preserve a sense of place and that their purpose is for people to walk, stroll, look, gaze, meet, play, shop, and even work alongside cars, but not dominated by them. The tools of traffic calming take a different approach from treating the street only as a conduit for vehicles passing through at the greatest possibility of speed. They include techniques designed to lessen the impact of motor vehicles by slowing it down and literally calming it, which helps make it more human friendly. Yeah. So anyway, this was discussed all the way back in 2008. What is one of the number one on their list? There's a traffic calming toolbox, okay? Number one, diagonal parking. Get rid of parallel parking. Period. It is not good. It is not safe. It is amazing that I can still parallel park my vehicle because I remember when I took my driver's test, which would be a number of decades back, that was one of the things you were required to know how to do. You had to know how to parallel park. You had to know how to do a K-turn, you know, just U-turns, all these different things. And you were tested on it. And I remember the parallel parking thing was really it was really unnerving to have to do a parallel park. Parallel parking is stupid. It makes no sense. So if you park diagonally, jutting out from the curb rather than parallel to it, there are benefits. Simple and inexpensive, changes both the perception and the function of a street, shortens the peering distance for people crossing the street. Drivers pulling out must be alert to approaching traffic. Well, there's a yay. Oncoming drivers must be alert to cars pulling out. All of this added driver awareness creates an awareness of pedestrians and bicycles, I'm going to put in here, can add up to 40% more parking space than parallel parking. How about that? More parking space. Not that we need more parking space. What we really need is less cars, but, you know, we talk about that a lot here. I'm thinking of a town nearby, Manchester, Connecticut, which has this style of parking on the street, diagonal parking. It's great. It really makes a lot more sense. Here's the biggie. When you're riding a bicycle down the street and someone is parallel parked, you just never know when that door is going open. And remember I discussed earlier as I opened the show that we were going to talk about dooring. Been doored lately? Yeah, dooring happens. And you can't get doored when people are diagonally parked. What a brilliant idea, right? Seems like a brilliant idea anyway. I guess it takes a little more space and a little more forethought when the traffic engineers are designing the roads. But changing one-way streets to two-way. This is interesting. Single or double lanes, either face or face, with less driving, less confusion, better traffic access. I don't know if I completely agree with that one. Widening sidewalks, narrowing streets, and traffic lanes. Now, that's a biggie. That's a real biggie. I guess the one-way street thing is, if you have a one-way street, then oftentimes you will have two lanes in the one-way street going down the street. I'm just thinking of the various Boston experiences I've had on one-way streets. And anyway, with the two-way street, you are forced to slow down because you've got oncoming traffic in both directions. Number three here is widening sidewalks, narrowing streets, and traffic lanes. That one's a biggie. The other big calming thing that happens here is a lot of times you'll put a center island in. We have that up here in stores right here at the University of Connecticut, and they put center island in, and they put plants in it and flowers certain times of the year. It's very pretty. It's nice, and it gives the effect of a much narrower lane that you're passing through. Not that it really slows people down to the 25 mile per hour speed limit that it's supposed to have effect with. This is a shout out to the UConn Police Department, and you want to catch people speeding, sit right after the traffic light on Route 275, and you can just pull people over like crazy because they go flying by me when I'm making a left-hand turn there. And they're not going 25 miles an hour when they hit the 25 mile an hour zone, and there's tons of pedestrians and crosswalks there. It's a university campus. Don't even get me started. So narrowing lanes to widen sidewalks eases crossing for pedestrians and gives more space for them to walk. Lanes also being narrowed like that transforms into traffic lanes, can be transformed into a bicycle lane. So the bikes and the traffic can both go through at the same time. Maybe this should also implement a 20 mile per hour limit when you do that, so that a bicycle could actually sort of stay within the speed limit of the traffic that's going through. I think that would be a good idea. All streets can be narrowed together to create more room for non-auto uses. The key here is non-auto uses. All of our highways, especially I know in my state here of Connecticut, is our highways are built for cars and trucks, and they're built to supposedly move a higher percentage of cars and trucks than the original older designs did. It really doesn't work. We have done this. We have done studies on this. And the real answer is to take away the traffic lights, put the roundabouts in, and just keep moving the traffic that way, and you'll move 35 to 37% more traffic. But that's another story for yet another either past episode or future episode of Bicycle Talk, because I do talk about it a lot. The other thing you can do is... If you can do bulbs, chokers, and neck downs. What's a bulb, a choker, or a neck down? Silly. Interchangeable terms for sidewalk extensions in selective areas. So, such as intersections or mid-block, as opposed to a full sidewalk widening. The benefits are that they provide a haven for pedestrians waiting to cross the street. They shorten the crossing distance, define parking bays, and deflect through traffic at a corner. Function as entry points, provide a space for amenities and enhancements, like kiosks, trees, lighting, that sort of thing. Chicanes, sidewalk extensions that jog out from one side of the street to the other to replicate a circuitous route.
Circuitous
route. Thank you, Fran.
Welcome.
The benefits, narrow curving roads encourage motorists to drive more smoothly and carefully. Chicanes can be formed to using sculpture, plantings, parking to enhance appearance, and diagonal parking and parallel parking can be alternated to create a chicane effect. Chicanes are best used on narrow roads to prevent cars from swinging out to maintain their speed around the bends. So, again, my point of reference is Manchester, Connecticut, which did this a really, really long time ago, and they've got these little bump outs at the crosswalks, which means if a car was going down that too fast, they would hit that with their car and do damage to their car. And it gives the pedestrian a little bit more of a kind of a barrier protection when they're trying to use a crosswalk. It also, once again, slows down traffic, and slowing down traffic makes it more inhabitable for bicycles and safe cycling. Roundabouts, we've talked about it a bunch of times on this show. I will continue to talk about it. The biggest thing with the roundabouts is they move more traffic. And if they move more traffic, both bicycle and also motorized, then that's a good thing, right? Isn't that what we're trying to do here? Move more traffic? Surprised that the traffic engineers, didn't figure this out a long, long time ago. Correction. In Europe, they figured it out a long, long time ago. And it really, why maybe they figured it out a long time ago? Maybe because people were not driving vehicles at the same rate as they were here in car-centric USA. And, you know, it was just people transport themselves in different ways in Europe, and they use their bicycles more. And so, therefore, the roundabouts became a much safer way of dealing with traffic. And essentially, there's also mini roundabouts, which are designed for small intersections, and they often use to slow traffic in a wide street and a smaller local street. So, big thing, they slow traffic down. Go through a traffic circle at 40 miles an hour is it's a no issue. It won't happen. You will not get your car through at 40 miles per hour. It can't happen. You will possibly get it through at 20 miles per hour, but most definitely at 15 miles per hour, which then slows cars down to the speed of the cyclist, which makes it safer for us to travel through. Unfortunately, this is going to take decades to teach Americans how to use traffic circles and roundabouts, because the result is comical at this point. Raised medians. All right, that median divider, that elevated island that you see in the middle of the streets, they curtail vehicle space. They provide a safe in-between refuge for pedestrians as they make their way across the street. Say you're trying to cross the street and you don't make it all the way, but you could stop at the median divider and you could wait for traffic to go the other way to get by. It's a protection point, once again. It's also a visual, and the visual, again, creates a narrower street. The narrower street works really well in sending the message that this road is narrow. I have to slow down. I have to slow down. Simple. So, you know, median dividers are good. Tight corner curbs, that's another thing you can do. And it just, again, congests the road to the point where people have to slow down. Diverters do the same thing. Diagonal diverters transverse an entire intersection, creating two unconnected streets that turn sharply away from one another. Semi-diverters restrict traffic from one direction to provide entrance to the street while permitting traffic to pass through in the other direction. And although they are effectively reducing traffic volume, diverters must be a part of a comprehensive improvement scheme, or else they can end up simply displacing congestion. Road humps, speed tables, cushions. So my question is, why not put road or speed tables at all crosswalks? It'll be flat for the pedestrian, so the pedestrian doesn't have to worry about twisting an ankle on a curved part or a bumped up piece. And it really wreaks havoc on the bottom of your car if you hit that thing at high speed. So why not put speed tables at all crosswalks? That's my suggestion. Speed tables, I like. Speed bumps are pretty good, or road humps, sometimes they're called. They tend to be about 3 inches high, 10 to 12 feet long, and they will effectively slow down traffic to 15 to 20 miles per hour without making drivers uncomfortable. Unless you hit it real hard, real fast, and then you'll be very uncomfortable. And you'll be off to your auto mechanic to have some work done on your vehicle because you probably did some damage. I like speed tables because there are road humps that are flat on the top and sometimes they're a little bit longer, and they just really tend to be more effective in my eyes as far as that goes. The bumps are pretty good. There, other parts are not. So anyway, this whole thing, rumble strips, that's another thing you can do, which make the whole car shake when you're riding in a motorized vehicle, which clues drivers and alerts them to congestion that's coming up that might be pedestrian-oriented or bicycle-oriented. Changing in cover in pavement color and texture, such as bricks or Belgian blocks, can also be an interesting way of creating that effect. So there's just a whole bunch of things that you can do. And again, this goes all the way back to 2008, Traffic Calming 101. What are we doing? Where are we now? Have we improved since 2008? I'm thinking not. But that's all right. You know, we'll get there. Eventually, we will get there, right? That's the plan. All right, let's move on to something else here on the show that we can talk about that'll be interesting. Okay, that takes care of last week's omission. I kind of did hit it briefly, but anyway, I just wanted to go over that. In 2021, more Americans bought e-bikes than electric cars. I talked about this earlier in the opening of the show. 880,000 e-bikes sold that year, nearly doubling the sales of the year before. So what's going on with the e-bikes? E-bikes are good. E-bikes are popular. E-bikes create a mode of transportation that is unlike other bicycle-type transportation because it gives you that extra addition of some power and some acceleration that you may not personally have when you're on a bicycle. It also allows you to pull a trailer behind you so you can transport more with you. Maybe you're transporting small passengers in that trailer. And the e-bike is just a definite better way to do it. So new research estimated that while 608,000 electric cars and trucks were sold in 2021, more than 880,000 e-bikes were also purchased. So Edward Benjamin from the Light Electric Vehicle Association predicts that more than 1 million e-bikes will be sold in the U.S. in this year. So we'll see what happens. Rising gas prices may be a factor. Please raise the price of gas. Please, please, please. I know. I'm the guy you hate because I'm talking about we need to raise the price of gas. But you know what? It really changes the game a lot. There's a couple things that change the game a lot. Rising gas prices and a pandemic will also change things a lot. Remember the pandemic? No one would get on a subway. No one would get on a bus. They all started riding their bikes and they all started walking. Brilliant. Not brilliant. Not something I'm going to encourage happening again because it was a horrible distraction and I know a lot of people that were very affected by it. So not something that we really want to encourage, but it sure did make a difference. The other thing about e-bikes is now there's e-cargo bikes are becoming more readily available and they're really kitted out for comfort and it's really easy now if you have the right weather and you're in the right area and you're starting a small family, you can carry kids in these things too. And some of them are brilliantly built, really, really brilliantly built. They're not inexpensive when you get into something like that, but you can certainly scrap the minivan for an e-bike if you go that direction. Put two kids in, you can put 12 to 15 bags of groceries in it. You can really get yourself around in one of these things without a lot of difficulty. Again, it is obviously weather related. And if you live up here in the great Northeast where we are, and you have that white stuff out there that we have right now, it gets a little bit harder to do and you have to really think it out a lot more, but it still can be done. It really can be done. So anyway, Georgia's 11 Alive station just investigated and verified the claim that more e-bikes were sold than electric cars last year. Their research team estimated this number that we were talking about, the 608,000 versus 880,000. There was an estimated 450,000 bikes that were sold in 2020. So this is like a big deal. It's happening. It's happening all over, especially the really, really big cities. And that's really where things are starting to happen more than anything else. So what do you do here? What you do is you discover, let's see if I can find this right now. I was looking for something specifically here. The other thing that can be done is that you can get a tax credit. But let me talk about the tax credit in a bit because I have some other stuff up here. A few different things. First of all, why do people that ride regular bikes hate e-bikes so much?
I don't hate them.
I don't know. You're not enough of a dyed-in-the-wool Lycra person to, you know, there are some snobs out there. I'll tell you. There are some snobs
out
there.
I totally see the value of the e-bike.
I do, too. But there are people out there that are not super thrilled about the fact that someone is pedaling a bicycle that's giving them some help. Well, you know what? They should. What do you say, Fran?
They've never been in their seventh decade.
They should get over themselves.
They should get over themselves.
That's a Fran saying right there. They should get over themselves. So this person says, I was riding my electric bike on a bike path today, and another bicyclist going the opposite direction, probably in his 40s or 50s, says, I hate e-bikes, as he's rolling away and looking at me. Like, good for you, Gramps, but why did you need to tell me that? What is it about e-bikes that upsets people so much? You notice I took away the foul language that went along with that. So someone, this is on Reddit, and so I just thought it was funny. Someone once said to me, an e-bike is cheating, to which my husband said, so it's driving.
Good point.
Good answer, eh? I like that one. So the next one comes up here. Some cyclists are so competitive, they don't realize that some of us actually ride to get to a destination. Correct. Correct you are. Yeah, it's not all about recreational cycling here. Yes, I'm a recreational cyclist. Yes, I also commute on my bicycle. Cheating of what? If you want to make things harder, why use a bike at all or legs? Walk on your hands to everywhere. Everything else is cheating. I thought these were really funny. By that rationale, regular bikes are cheating too. Using technology to go faster than your own legs would take you? Cheat!
That's great.
It is. Oh, God, these are hysterical. This person says, my husband told me a story about how he was riding his e-bike up a mountainous bike path and respectfully went around someone on a regular mountain bike. As my husband went by, the guy called out to him, cool motorcycle, in a derisive tone.
Right.
Yeah. The thing is, my husband is a disabled vet. He's partially paralyzed in one leg, and the only way for him to ride a bike is on an e-bike, even with an e-bike that on the trail that was hard for him. We don't always know other people's stories. E-bikes make biking accessible to people with disabilities, people who are overweight, people who are old, people like me who just don't want to drive a car but need transportation. It's just a tool. And people need to stop getting so worked up about it. Or, as Fran says, they should get over themselves. So, you know, you cannot judge when you see someone on an e-bike. I have ridden with people with e-bikes, and they're doing everything they can to do what they are doing on the bike. Am I fortunate and privileged to be able to still have enough health and fitness to ride a conventional bicycle and you know, really ride with them? Yeah, I am. I really am. And, you know, I've been given a new lease on life because I had my quadruple bypass here and got myself all fixed up. That was Fran's hand on top of my head, in case you're wondering. And, you know, I'm very healthy right now, and I feel really good. But, you know, the e-bike has its purpose. There's no question about it. I remember when my friend Billy, who is probably on here somewhere watching or listening, he got his first e-road bike. And I have three friends now that have e-road bikes. And I'm talking, like, totally cool, you know, 60 to 80 mile range, looks like a real road bike type bikes. And they're not inexpensive, but they have changed their game as to whether or not they can ride out here in the hills of northeastern Connecticut or not, because it's hilly out here. We average 60 to 65 feet per mile out here, and it can be challenging for a lot of people, especially as you get older, or maybe as you've incurred an injury or something that is slowing you down these days. Billy got his new bike and contacted me right away and said, take me for a ride and find something hilly. So I did. I figured, what the heck? Let's try this thing out, see where it goes. And it was great. We had a great ride. I was working my butt off going up the hills, but Billy was just having a nice conversation with me. It was very pleasant. It was really, really, really fun. So much fun now that I am looking at the eventual e-bike fund, because I want to get myself one of these jazzed out ones like these guys have. You know, I think it's in my future. I think it's definitely there. I've got an e-bike, which is of antique stature, I guess. Once you get over a certain number of years, you can put antique plates on your motorized vehicle, too. So maybe I should put antique plates on this bike. But anyway, What do I use it for? I use it for commuting. I use it for shopping. I use it for just basically, you know, riding around town, running errands, that sort of thing. It's perfect for that. You don't really, you're still working hard. Don't get me wrong here. You're still working when you're riding on one of these e-bikes. It's electric assist. The assist is there when you need it. The assist is there when you're pulling a heavy load. The assist is there when you're going up a very steep climb. So it still is a bicycle in all other measures. So, you know, I think it's great. I think it's lovely. So anyway, so someone makes a mention here. I ride both and I like both. I'm with you. I am with you. Maybe it's the pride of moving under one's own power with mocking those who need a little help, which is a childish notion anyway. No one is racing and everyone has different battle stories and capacity. Let me tell you something right away. Everyone is racing, all right? I don't care who they are. If they're out on a ride and they're on a group ride, there's always going to be somebody in there who is racing and challenging others because they are, I don't know, insecure, not really sure what it is, but I see it all the time. And those are the folks that probably have problems with an e-bike because you can't beat the e-bike. And so what? Who cares? You want to race? Here's my suggestion to you. Go to USA Cycling and get yourself a cycling license and go out and race your bike. But please don't just do that because you think you're pretty good at it. Join a club, find someone who does race bikes, get someone to teach you how to do it correctly and how to do it safely. Because if you jump into a road race and you think, well, I did a couple of triathlons last year, so I am ready to race, you don't have a clue. You need to really learn how to handle a bike in a pack situation. You need to learn the etiquette. And yeah, that's where the whole bike snob thing comes out again. I get it. Been there, done that. But there's a real good reason why there's a little bit of a snob effect when you get into a race situation. Nobody wants to die. Okay, and you take that one rider who is really strong and they really think they know what they're doing, and they're going to go out there and they're going to race the bike and they're going to show everybody how strong they are. That is not the person I want riding next to me in a Peloton. I just don't want to know about it. So learn how to do it right and go get yourself a license, slap a number on your back, and go race your bike. I used to carry USA Cycling applications with me when I was leading group rides out of my bike store years ago, because there would always be someone who would come to beat the ride, so to speak. And if they were doing that, I would pull them aside and I would hand them a form to go get themselves a race license. And they go, well, I don't want to race bikes. And then I would just look at them and say, then stop racing on my ride, please. You know, that's all I ask.
Did you
Simple.
Say please?
Yes. I did say please. Mm-hmm. I was nice about it. I've gotten nicer even now than I was then, so.
You're still a cranky old bike guy.
I am a cranky old bike guy. That's why I have this show, Bicycle Talk, because it's all about cranky old bike guys that love to talk about bikes. It's a good thing. If everyone would just ride a bike, the world would be such a nicer place to live. It really would. I've said that a bunch of times. Anyway, yeah, there you go. That was the explanation of why people are cranky about the e-bikes situation. Why? So anyway, I don't think that we as recreational cyclists hate e-bikes. I don't feel any hatred towards them. I feel a strong sense of appreciation for them, and knowing that that technology is there and is available to me and to you and to anyone else who's out there, I think it's a great thing. And taking a look at those statistics and how the e-bikes are outselling electric vehicles, that's a big deal. Even Elon Musk made that statement that and that was 2021 that I read that from, right? Elon Musk said that by 2030 the e-bikes and e-transportation was going to far outsell electric motorized vehicles,
well,
electric cars and trucks.
There's a simple reason why e-bikes are outselling electric motor vehicles.
Price.
Yes.
That's it.
Electric motor vehicles, it's a crime because...
You're so far away from the mic, Fran, that no one's going to be able to hear you. So if you want to talk, you need to come closer. I'm so sorry.
Electric motor vehicles are priced way beyond the ability of the average person to buy one.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is horrible because they're supposed to save the world, save the environment, save money in so many other ways.
Well, they are saving money for all the people that manufacture them and make god-awful gobs of money off of them. But the...
it's criminal.
It is criminal. It is totally criminal. And I sure hope that, you know, things get a little more regulated as far as that goes, if they really think that that's the way we're going to save the world. But in the meantime, you can... So let's take a look at that. If you go out and purchase... I don't even know where the bottom line is on electric vehicle. It's got to be in the $30,000 to $40,000 range for an electric car or truck. It's really, really high. And I'm talking about a full E-type e-car or e-truck. I think they're $40,000 to $60,000 what they are. You can get an e-bike, a really, really nice one, for $4,000 to $6,000. So if you're talking one-tenth the price, yeah, the bike is definitely a much better alternative. And especially if you're, you know, a young family and you've got to, you know, you got to bring the kids here and there and do whatever, and you get yourself a neat little cargo bike and off you go, or a bike with a trailer, anything, really. Yeah. Makes more sense. Makes a lot more sense. So let's hear it for a few things here. How an e-bike can change your life. Okay. I thought this was kind of cool. This was written by, we're going to accept a cookies, you silly site. My e-bike changed my life, okay? And it could change yours too, okay? This is written by Dan Coyce, June 18th, 2023. And he went out and he purchased himself an e-bike and completely changed every way he looks at the environment that he is that he has around him. His e-bike has changed my life. I'm happier, healthier, and more active. My relationship to my community has been completely transformed. And he says, I guess I become an e-bike guy. You can too. E-bikes have gotten enough media coverage in the recent years that you might assume that they've attained mass cultural ubiquity, but it's not really true. When I start going on tiresomely at parties and cookouts about my e-bike, a lot of people ask, what's an e-bike again? People don't know what they are. It's a general term for a bicycle that has an electric assist, is really what it is. It is not a moped. It is not a motorcycle. It requires you to pedal the machine in order to make the electric part of the machine work. So it is simply a way of enhancing the original bicycle idea that you might have out there. So, and you can get them that go anywhere, you know, you can, like this guy says he has one that tops out at 18 miles per hour. The one I have tops out at 15 miles per hour. If that. And, you know, it's just the newer designs are made to go as much as 28 miles per hour. And that was an electric assist bike. It's not an actual, it's not a motorcycle. It's not a moped. And then you start getting into the situation where there are e-bikes out there or electric assist bikes out there that may exceed that 30 mile an hour range. They're no longer considered a bicycle, or now they're a motorized vehicle, and now you have to register it, and now you have to have a license for it. So there's a fine line between how fast can I go on this thing, or how fast is this thing capable of, versus under electric power versus your own power. Now, on your own power, that's a different story. You know, you could possibly go a lot faster under your own power. But again, you really should be, obeying the speed limit. Because that you could technically get pulled over for speeding if you were going too fast in a place that you had exceeded the speed limit. So it can happen. But anyway, this guy's feeling was that he was able to commute more with it. He was able to run errands with it more, and just really, again, a big game changer. And then as far as the health and fitness part goes, yeah, you get health and fitness from these things. You certainly do. I've talked about that on previous shows. We've talked about how there are definite studies that were made giving, you know, a small group of people e-bikes and then the other group of people non-electric bikes, and who stayed with it more and on a more consistent basis, the people on the e-bikes. So consistency is what gives you the fitness, and you're not selling yourself short by going to an e-bike. It's a great thing. I think they're wonderful. And so, anyway, let's... I have definitely had a lot of discussion about this, but it's a good thing. E-bikes are definitely there. So here's your guide to U.S. electric bike rebates and tax credits. This was from 2023. Just so you know, I know there is one here in Connecticut because we had it a little while ago. So this was the tax credit offered up to 30% of the cost of the e-bike. This is not a national thing yet, I don't think, but it is. It depends on what state you're in. California's Clean Vehicle Rebate Program offers rebates for electric bikes and other zero-emission vehicles. An individual can get a rebate from $1,000 to $7,500 on the purchase or lease of an eligible electric bike. $7,500 for an e-bike. Oof. I don't know if any there out there that cost that much. Anyway, Colorado, its recent statewide e-bike rebates launches in August of 23. The government generously put $10 million into the program's first year. Residents earning at or below 80% of the region's median income are eligible for the largest discounts, an $1,100 rebate. Those who earn 80 to 100% of their AMI are eligible for a $500 refund. There are no reductions for buyers who earn more than the adjusted median income. So this is pointed and oriented towards people who are more financially challenged, which is sort of a good thing, sort of a deterrent, but the reason for it, and the main reason for it, and I remember when Connecticut first came out with theirs, is the program like sold out within a few days, and all the eligibility for getting yourself a rebate, they were gone within a few days. So that's because the states are doing this right now, not the federal government. When the federal government starts doing this, then we're going to talk about, you know, going against your federal taxes, and that's going to be a big-time game changer. And there is, like I said earlier, there is a bill that was introduced back in 2020, 2021. It's a long time ago, but it still has not gone all the way through the House and through Congress. And it seems like that would be an important thing to go to work on, right? While you guys are fighting with one another and getting nothing done, why don't you figure that one out? The Connecticut e-bike incentive program offers a minimum of $500 for a purchase of an electric bike. Connecticut residents who are 18 years or older can apply for this tax rebate. However, the rebates are only available to low to moderate income families. Florida has passed a federal electric e-bike bill. Florida residents who buy e-bikes as a sustainable and environmentally friendly means of transportation are eligible for a 30% tax credit up to $1,500 and a purchase of less than an $8,000 e-bike. Hawaii can get a credit up to 20% off the cost of electric bike with a maximum value of up to $500. Illinois, it pays Let's see, job ad pays $4,000 off the price of a new EV and $1,500 off the price of an electric motorcycle. That's not really an e-bike. Maine Electrify Everything program, rebates of $300 to South Portland residents for an electric bike. But if you purchase an e-cargo bike, you might get a rebate of $500. Maryland EV tax credit looks like it's just for cars. Massachusetts has a state rebate program, $500 to $750 rebates for e-bike purchases, as well as refundable tax credit equal to 30% of the cost of a qualified electric bicycle. And electric bike company customers would receive a rebate of up to $500, while low and moderate income consumers would get a rebate up to $750. As the Michigan E-Bike Transportation Incentive Program Act, in Michigan, you can get vouchers up to $500, 90% of the retail cost of an e-bike, whichever is less. The amount would rise to $1,250 for people living in low-income households. Minnesota. Nice to see the cold states offering this. So they've got an electric-assisted bicycle rebate program, and they're going to spend $2 million in 2024 and another $2 million in 2025 on e-bike purchases. Watch how fast that money gets swallowed up. I was amazed at how quick it went away in Connecticut. Nevada is also providing a $500 credit to residential customers who purchase a Level 2 EV charging station. Yeah, right. Okay, that's cars. I'm going to go over Nevada. I'm going to go right past Nevada. New Jersey currently does not offer any electric bike rebate program. New Mexico, get on it, New Jersey. New Mexico passed the Senate bill to offer $1,200 of instant rebate on electric bike purchases with a protective helmet. Smart. Good move. New York Clean E-Bike Program was developed by New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, provides a 50% rebate on e-bike purchases up to $1,100. 50% rebate up to $1,100? That's pretty generous. Go New York. Oregonians can save up to $7,500 when the purchase of an eligible electric bike by taking advantage of the clean vehicle and charge ahead rebate. For the purchase or lease of a new EV that meets requirements, that's car related. I'm not going to go there. Rhode Island, the Erica Nadowski Memorial Electric Bike Rebate Program. It's a standard rebate of $350 or 30% off the final cost of an e-bike or e-cargo vehicle. They can save up to $1,000 or 75% of the total cost, whichever is less. Vermont. Burlington residents receive rebates of $200 for the purchase of an e-bike. Washington State, up to $1,200. Washington, D.C., up to $1,500. End note, electric bikes are a great way to get around, without causing air pollution or making traffic worse. They're easy on the environment since they don't burn gas. So this is pretty simple stuff, right? You would think. Anyway, that's our guide. That's our state-by-state guide that I have in front of me at this time. I had talked earlier about dooring. If you know what dooring is, I don't have to describe it, but I will describe it very quickly. It's when a driver opens a car door from a parallel parked vehicle, and they take you out with their door. And the L.A. in Los Angeles, they are taking an excellent deep dive into dooring and what happens with people getting doored. And it's sad, but, you know, it happens. There are dangers of drivers dooring cyclists. You can get hit pretty hard. I'll give the short story here. My partner many years ago got doored in downtown Willimantic. When he landed from the dooring, he actually hit the door and fell backwards into the gentleman who was swinging his legs out of his motorized vehicle, and he sat on his lap. And he looked him right in the eyes and said, "Nice door." That's kind of funny, but that's an old Scott Carter story from way back in the day. So, yeah, Doering is a situation. And the question is, who gets charged when, you know, you're doored? Well, the fallout can range from a few bumps and bruises to serious damage. I think that this is definitely something that a driver should be charged on if they are flipping their door open without looking behind them when they open up. If they were to have done it in front of another motorized vehicle, their door would be off of the vehicle. It would have ripped the door right off. You know, a bicyclist, we're not as sturdy as an F-150 pickup truck. But anyway, dooring is an issue. Dooring happens. Have you been doored? You should send us a little note. Let us know. Let us know if it ever happened to you. It's kind of a neat little subject that we can talk about in the future. So, yeah, dooring. It was on Street's blog. It looked kind of interesting. I thought I would check into it. So Los Angeles is taking a deep dive into the dooring, though, because apparently it happens much more often than it should. So anyway, we're going to pass on that one, and we are running out of time, folks. It all happens. I think I've covered a lot of what I wanted to cover. There's a few more things which we'll get to again next week because it's down at the bottom of my list, and I haven't gotten there yet. We're going to talk a little bit more about 2024 and what's happening and coming up in 2024. I asked you last week for my New Year's show, what was your resolution? I haven't heard any resolutions yet. Let's hear some resolutions. I think I made one in front of Fran on her show earlier that I was going to try to use my bicycle for commuting a little bit more. And I was also going to, I got to try to break my record of 4 days in a row of not driving the car. That's my record so far. Can you beat me? Anybody competitive out there want to go for it? Let's do it. Come on. Take me out, please. Please. 4 days. That's my record. 4 days. I know there are people that commute every single day on their bicycle. So how many days can you go without driving your motorized vehicle? That's the challenge. Speaking of challenges, the Natchog Epic is coming up very soon, and it will be Sunday, March 24th. The registration is open, and I just want to let you know that there are different distances here, okay? This is a gravel ride, 82 miles, 60 miles, 45 miles, and 32 miles. The pre-registration limit is going to be 850 riders. 337 have already signed up. And just so you know, there is a waiting list on the Men's Epic, but which is the 82-mile ride, but it's sold out already. So, yeah, in March, in New England, when the weather could be, you know, anything. Anyway, so sign up for the Natchog Epic if you haven't done it already. It's coming up. There's still 60-mile rides, 45 miles, and 32-mile rides out there. And the women's Epic is not sold out yet. But there are waiting lists on these. So if you are still interested in going there and someone cancels out, you could be put on a waiting list. That's another thing to look at. Finishing points. Those e-bikes. What's your opinion? Are you a dyed-in-the-wool roadie snob, or have you seen the light? So, it's 2024, second week. What's that resolution? More miles? Commuting to work around town? Better fitness? Or simply enjoying your bicycle rides you take more by slowing down and smelling the roses? And, oh, we do love those listener comments, so please keep them coming. Remember, cyclocross is still here. There's the Worlds coming up. Yeah, we'll get to that. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day, park the car or truck, and ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook live on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page or podcast, you can leave a little comment down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information, please just drop me an email. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you all so much for listening. See you next week.